So any other comments on the agenda to start? Any additions that we know for sure? I will say that the comment we got back from Tim, that we're trying to change the laws of physics by expanding the time available from an hour to longer than that, is really was from a discussion I think he must not have been a part of from the last call, I think, where he said we would have a below-the-line list of things that if we finished early on the other items, that we would have things in queue so we could use our full hour efficiently. I think that's the reason for extra ones, and then we would then pick, that's why the time allocations are. If we had 10 minutes left, we would decide if we wanted to take on, say, the privacy discussion when we finished, say, with use case review 10 minutes early. So that's the deal with that. Anything else that we've left off that we don't need action on but want to discuss today? Anybody? Okay, let's get started.
Sorry, Richard. Well, one thing. We're going to want to talk about the handoff of the specs that we have in this group to the working group. There's like an official W3C process we're going to have to go through that's going to take about maybe a week or two. So we'll want to mention that at some point.
And Mana, while you're on the floor, would you just go ahead and talk about where we're at on the vote and any comments you want to make on that?
Sure. Let me put that topic in there. Right, so the folks here that are W3C members can track the status of the vote. That can't be right. Is that right? Wow. Yeah, you can track the votes there. I can't say publicly how things are going, but fantastic would be an understatement. So things are going well. We have reached out to 214 organizations. We've had a very healthy response. The vote closes at the end of this week, so Sunday, this coming Sunday is the vote closing. So if you haven't voted yet, please vote. Things are looking really good. But it's really important that, you know, if you do support the work, just go in and make a note of that. And yeah, I mean, that's where we are. It's just if you haven't voted, vote. We have done all of the outreach that we're going to, and things are looking really well, really good.
What are the requirements? And, you know, what happens when someone makes a formal objection, if someone does?
Right, so the requirements are 5%. The watermark that you have to go above is 5% of the W3C membership, which is around 24 members right now. We have passed that by a very healthy margin. When someone formally objects, they have to say why they're formally objecting, and we have to respond to them. So we've done this on the AC forum. There has been one formal objection. We have responded to them, and then it's up to the W3C staff to see if the response addresses the concern that the member company raised. So we do have a response. So if you are, here's the response to the formal objection. You will not be able to see this if you're not a W3C member. Response to formal objection. But those of you that are W3C members can see our response. The formal objection, well, I can't say anything again because we have a number of non-W3C members on the call. So when the vote closes, Christopher, to be more specific, when the vote closes, the W3C staff will look at the formal objection and the response to it and then determine whether or not we've at least tried to address the concern. And then they'll move appropriately. I would expect there to be a number of more formal objections towards the end. Sometimes they come in on the last day. And if that's the case, then we have to address all of the formal objections before we can move forward.
Okay, we have someone on the queue. Go ahead. I don't know that. I don't know these names as well. D-E-Z-E-L-L.
Yeah, I'm having to
unmute myself, sorry. Couldn't get there quick enough. I don't even know if it's safe for me to ask this question. I'm probably better not. I guess what I was going to say, Manu, is if you – I guess I have never felt the need to disagree with a formal objection before, so I'm not sure whether that's actually kosher on the list. So I guess that was my question.
Question meaning, but, like, do we respond, or?
Well, the group has responded, and responded is probably best to do that, but I just have my own personal feelings. So.
You mean, should you respond individually to that?
Well, respond as an AC rep. I've got a feeling that's probably not good practice. I probably shouldn't open that can of worms, so. Sorry to interrupt.
Anyone else with questions or comments on the vote process or the progression towards Sunday's closing of the vote? Okay, then we're up to the main item for today. Oh, sorry, we've got Christopher.
I don't understand why an AC can't comment on another AC's objection in the AC list. So unless there's some rule that I don't know about, but I'm new, and if there is, I'd love to know if there is or whatever, but, you know.
No, Christopher, I don't know of any such rule. I was sort of thinking out loud, and I may actually comment, so I would say if you feel so motivated that you should do so.
Yeah, I've been thinking about it. If anything, there's an underlying anger that I'm trying to hide. So that's part of the reason why I haven't commented yet, because I'm frustrated. So, the particular objection that I, the particular objection which we can't talk about, whatever, but is was, off on multiple levels. So, I haven't responded yet, but I will see.
Manu, I think you're next on the queue.
Right. Just to close this up, so we probably don't need to talk about the formal objection that much, mainly because there's so many other votes in favor of it. This is an outlier. The response that I put into the AC forum was merely an attempt to highlight where the formal objection was off and provide material for the W3C staff, so they didn't have to do a whole bunch of heavy lifting. So they had an answer. We have thought about this stuff. Here's where we thought about it. Here's links to the charter and where we've discussed it and, the issues we're tracking around it. So, and here's why what they're suggesting is just not a workable solution. So Christopher is absolutely right. It was off on a variety of different points. We've addressed those points. We probably don't need to, unless, like David Azell said, unless you really feel motivated to respond, you probably don't need to respond because, the facts are just kind of on the table at this point.
Speaker queue is empty. Ready to move on to the use cases. Okay, let's put the topic in as use case. Do I just put topic use case?
Yes.
Okay. There has been a number of people pointing out we had a lot of content from the past, and we're trying to aggregate that, and so we have the catchment of use case material. And then we have one primary use case, which we have links to, which were, I don't know if we've been sent out prior or if we need to repost them now. Manu, do we have that? Dan said that you guys would have the link.
To the issues list or the
Well, I thought this was a use case topic, but you tell me.
Yeah, it is. I'm sorry. Yeah, I meant the use cases. Let me. Here is the use cases document. Use cases document. That's there. Awesome. And then we've got use case issues. Use case issues here.
And I think our agenda item for today is to go through this to make sure that we have broad consensus that this is, you know, what needs to be changed about it and to what degree we agree with what's there. So that's the reason I think, Matt, Manu, that we have this on the agenda, right?
Well, actually, I don't know. My understanding was that Joe Andrew had submitted a fairly long description of issues he sees with the current use cases document. And a number of people in the group have said that we've dropped a number of use cases that are fairly important, like, for example, like coupons, loyalty, membership, which is an active work
right.
item in the web payments IG. So the question is, like, what do we do? What's the focus with the use cases document? That's how I understood it. But again, not my agenda item. So it's up to you to tell us how you'd like to proceed.
Well, yeah, it wasn't mine either. I thought Dan had said we needed this out here, so, or whoever did, we can jump in here. Is John on the call?
Yes. Yes, I am. Sorry about that. So this is, to me, the scope of what we are going to be doing as a working group, I think, is unclear. And that's sort of my highest meta-level question is, given that the use cases have become a part of the output of the working group, I think understanding the scope of what we want to do with that, what should the content of the document be from an outline perspective, I think that's an open issue. And then I think there's also, is the content that's in that outline the content that we want? We might be missing content. We also might have content that's a little off or a little less than rigorous that we want to improve. So how we address all those, I'm not sure what's the right way to do it, but I think this is the conversation where we're figuring out how to have that conversation. But that's not too meta.
Matt Stone, you have the cue.
Yeah, we were having this discussion in the last meeting before the holidays, and recognize that we were kind of jumping into some of the technical details of data model and so on, which is a deliverable in the charter, without necessarily having the all agreed on the context of the use cases that it's destined to support. So that this discussion is really to say, if we get to the point in the specification development where we have a judgment call to make or a confusion point, it should be driven by the content of the use cases, because the spec is there to support the use cases that we're trying to develop. So if that's true, then we should come to consensus quickly on the use cases that we are building the specification to meet. Rather than the other way around. We don't want to put the cart before the horse, essentially.
Manu, you have the floor.
Right. So thanks for the background, Matt. I had completely forgotten that we had that conversation. So, yes, totally agreed. I think what we might want to do, I can talk a bit about scope of the use cases. So Matt's absolutely right. The use cases are meant to drive the technical work, especially when we have a hard decision to make. The use cases should be prioritized, meaning like we should have a core set of things that should be enabled by the time we're done. And it should be fairly focused. Like, you know, having a list of 100 use cases is not helpful to the group, but understanding kind of the general stuff that that system should be able to do is helpful, which is why I think the current use cases document is actually pretty good in that respect. So maybe we can talk about, you know, some shortcomings of the use cases document. I think Joe, in a number of the issues, outlined a number of those shortcomings. So I'd like Joe to kind of go through those things, what he wrote in the issues, maybe point us to the issues that he raised, and then walk us through what he'd like to change. The other weakness that has been pointed out in the use cases document is that there are other use cases documents at W3C that do a really good job of pointing out real use cases, not hypothetical situations that we want to attempt to solve, which are good. Like, we also want to do that, but other use cases that basically are like, you know, Airbnb and hotels.com and these other sites currently post reputations about their users. And here's the data format that all of them use. As you can see, they're all doing the same thing, but they're totally incompatible data formats. Verifiable claims could unify them in this way, right? So that's an example of the use cases document picking from real world examples instead of making it overly generic. A number of AC reps have asked us to do that. It's still up to us whether or not we want to do that. Like, I mean, Joe may have some strong feelings about, you know, doing this one way or the other. So as far as scope is concerned, I think we can get really wrapped up in use cases, and we shouldn't do that. The use cases document should give us a good framework, but the group absolutely should not put, you know, 40% of its effort into the use cases document. Or if it does, you know, we should be doing this in parallel, because there are a number of, when the working group starts, it is supposed to be technical work. We're not supposed to be talking that much about use cases anymore, but it's very important that we keep the use cases up to date. So if we have someone like, you know, Joe and Shane and Dan, or I'm just naming a couple of random names, but specifically Joe, right? If we have Joe keeping an eye on this stuff and keeping it in sync with what the group is discussing, I think that's really good. So Joe, I'm going to stop there, and when the queue comes back around to you, please let me know if that answered your scope question or if it's still a bit muddy. Done.
Joe, you have the queue.
Okay. So that helps, Manu. And in part, I'm hearing there's some license for me to propose, well, what do I think we should be doing? I do like the notion of, you know, to have a use case conversation that's not slowing down the technical track work. Maybe that means another weekly meeting to address that. To your other items, you know, I think one big area I would like to see as a new section in that document are examples. As you mentioned, other W3C standards, their use cases are based on examples. Ours is not based on real-world examples. And that we could have examples both where they could be used, which I think is what you just gave, and we could also have examples where they are in use, which is what I think was asked of us during the voting process. Where are people using the actual technology that you guys are proposing, as opposed to where it could theoretically be used to solve a need in the marketplace? I think both of those sections could be very interesting, and I think it would be useful for anyone trying to understand who wants that sort of, here's a concrete real world instead of the theoretical conversation. The other area where I would like to explore adding content, and you know, it wasn't clear if this is something we want to tackle as a project, is I would like to put before the group and potentially spend the time to get consensus around one or more engagement models. This is a technique some of you who are at Rebooting Web of Trust have seen it. It's basically just a life cycle perspective of an individual engaging with the system. So we've done this work at Rebooting Web of Trust about a Syrian refugee engagement model, with the idea that this would be some sort of self-sovereign identity system underlying this user experience, from Yoram going to a landing on the beach in Greece and interacting with UN and Greek soldiers, etc., and how can we enable that with some sort of self-sovereign system? So the benefit of that architecture is it lets you take in just one of these, well, it's not a single use case, it's more complicated, but take a series of use cases with a single subject and understand how, for example, to look at some of our use cases, how a doctor who's going to move their credentials from one repo to another, which is a use case in our document, how do they actually start at the very beginning to create those credentials, or were they given to them, or how do they bootstrap into the system, all the way through presenting and using those use cases, updating and correcting those use cases, the verifiable claims. An engagement model is a type of content that I think it might be useful for us to put some time into. I don't know if that addresses everything, but let me let the queue go and we can continue the conversation.
Christopher, you're next in the queue.
Thank you. So I have been very happy with the results of working on the sort of expanded engagement models, and have found that they reveal some things that are important. In my particular case, I asked Joe to kind of take a look at, you know, the essential engagement model around, you know, the old style web of trust and why or how it might work with verified claims in a more modern setting. And, you know, it kind of reveals some missing pieces for, you know, how things might function and deploy. It doesn't necessarily inform that much about the data formats, but potentially, you know, how much data and what kind of data might go in them in the future. I found it valuable, and I recommend that, you know, other parties that maybe you know, looking at very specific models, you know, they're planning on deploying sooner verified claims, to go through the process of doing these engagement models on, you know, their offerings. And I think it can emerge some useful things. Will it drive forward, you know, our very limited current charter as such? Less so, but if, you know, we're actually trying to get this stuff deployed in the real world, there's some good stuff there. That's it.
Okay. Nano, you're next in queue.
Right. So to follow up on what Christopher and both Joe said, I think that the current use cases document, I think, is good. Like, I don't think it's bad in any way, shape, or form. I think if we left it as is, it would be good for the group. Now, I think having engagement models in there would help. It would be an additional thing that would be helpful, that, as Christopher said, would be a bit more, you know, forward looking and bring these things together. I think that's a good thing to have as well. So, you know, with these working groups, it's the people that step forward to volunteer to do the work, that's what ends up getting done in the working group. So if we're hearing that, you know, engagement models are a good thing to have, we do want to improve the use cases document, and Joe's saying, I'm interested in helping to do that, that's great. Like, that's all we need, and we just need to, you know, get out of the way of Joe and have him tell us what he needs us to get consensus on to make progress. So all this sounds good. Engagement model is good. Oh, right. So front of mind use cases. So there are a number of us in this group that are working on products where we need verifiable claims. So for example, like, you know, there's this digital offers thing that's being incubated at W3C in the Web Payments Interest Group. We're collecting a number of people around that initiative through David Ezell's leadership and Linda Toth's leadership. So, you know, that's happening. Those people are really interested in this stuff, meaning they're interested in doing digital offers and digital coupons. I personally think that verifiable claims could be used for that. And so how do we get that into our use cases document to kind of demonstrate that we're interested in chasing that use case? Personally, or from a corporate standpoint, Digital Bazaar is very interested in digital coupons, digital loyalty, and building and deploying stuff around that. So, you know, I'd like to personally see more of that stuff in the use cases document, because we have something to kind of sink our teeth into there, versus some of the more abstract use cases. I think the ID 2020 use cases are also really good. The refugee crisis use cases are also very good. I know a number of us care deeply about that. But I question whether or not we're going to deploy stuff around that. But to be clear, I think we should work on that, because it's important work. But we should also have some stuff that's just aligned with where W3C, some of the W3C members and potential members want to go. And I think digital offers, digital coupons, digital loyalty is one of those things. Potentially identity cards, not identity itself. We want to stay away from that. But things like digital driver's license, digital passport, local town cards, those might be interesting as well. So just all examples of the types of use cases and interaction models we want to build, might want to build around. Okay, done.
Okay, Christopher? Just noting that.
Yeah, I just wanted to be clear as far as, you know, some early implementation things. There are a number of early Web of Trust oriented examples of using these tools for security reviews, academic peer reviews of papers, a variety of different functionality in that type of space is an early prospect.
Sorry, Joe, I skipped you in the process there. You have the floor.
No worries. I just wanted to add, so some of the content in, like, I'm looking at the user needs outline where we sort of have the visual representation of the domains that we want to focus our conversation on, which is not to say that if the use case isn't here, we don't care about it, but rather this is how we're filtering our conversation, so we can get through meetings like this within the time limit. Some of these items are not well-formed use cases, and to get them to be well-formed use cases is just going to take some teasing out of figuring out how to move it into that. For example, the refugee crisis, that's not a use case. That's sort of a whole domain of potential use cases. So I'd like to tease that out, and that's where I think using an engagement model might help with that. But some of these also, I might need to talk to domain experts. So for example, what we're doing in education, you know, are those four really the right four, and are they good use cases? Maybe they are, maybe they're not. But I think that's also part of the work ahead, is for me to sit down with some of the folks who are working in that area and just validate that, okay, these are the handful of education use cases that we want to incorporate into our conversations. That's it.
Other comments, or maybe moving to a summary of what we want to do about this at this point, based on the suggestions we've had so far?
This is Joe Andrew. So I think the taking Manu's lead on this, I think it's on me to, for the structural things, to propose the work and start having those conversations, and in addition to engage as much as possible through GitHub. Some of these kinds of conversations about what should our scope be, it was hard to gauge that on GitHub. But as we move forward on like refining some of these use cases, I think we can do some of that on GitHub. But I think it's on me to take the lead on this, and I guess that's what I'll step up and do.
Great, thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Any other comments or items to be summarized for what we're going to do to address this, fleshing out of the use cases and eliminating some of the peripheral ones or putting them someplace that's appropriate?
Yeah, a couple of comments. So thank you, Joe, for kind of leading the charge on that. Very much appreciated, and it is very much needed. So it's good to know we've got someone that's in control of that. Extra use cases. So there's been some criticism that we've let a number of use cases just fall on the floor and people can't find them anymore, and that's true. They can't because it's buried in GitHub. So moving forward, what we may want to do is use the issue tracker to hold all of these extra use cases that will enable Joe to have one place that he can go through to sort through these to see if there are common threads between them, to see if we should do an interaction model around something someone's saying. Basically, it'll hopefully enable people to kind of engage in a discussion on a particular use case rather than kind of flood the mailing list with use cases that people may not care about. So if someone, the document at that point then stays very focused. Joe does an aggressive amount of filtering to figure out what actually gets into the document. Everything that doesn't necessarily get into the document stays as an open issue in GitHub, and we just have tons and tons of use cases that are tracked there and discussed, and hopefully we come to some decisions on that. And if we can tag, since they're in the use cases repository, if we can tag them with something, we can always go back and find all of the use cases that we've discussed, and as well as where we are on that use case, like if it made it into the document or if we decided to keep it out of the document, but we want to remember it. So that just a request to continue doing what people have been doing, which is entering things into the use cases issue tracker if you have a use case, and then maybe pinging someone if you really want it moved into the core use cases document.
Okay. Next person on the queue is
Hi, it's Adam. So before I run too far past it, I just wanted to sort of get behind the point of having a domain expert look at the use cases that are in the domain. And just use myself as an example. When I read through the use case document, I look at a lot of the use cases that don't have to do with financial services, and I sort of wonder how complete they are, but I don't feel all that confidence in, saying how complete I think they are. But if I look at the finance use cases, that's where I came from. I have a lot of experience in that industry. I can tell you very specifically about those use cases. And I'd like to even say that it, in my opinion, should be a requirement that all of the use cases have a domain expert from the group, if there is one at all, sort of vet them. And if there isn't any domain expert here for a group, I question whether we can really have the use case there because we don't have the kind of knowledge needed to really vet it. Thanks.
That's a good point. We'll have to figure out, as Joe's doing, I'll acknowledge Christopher next, but as Joe's doing his work or others are doing their work, we'll have to be able to start pairing a domain expert if that we want to follow that example to assist with the fleshing out of that. We'll have to watch for the need for that if people don't automatically volunteer to jump in on their own use case of interest in their own expert domain area. Christopher?
Sorry, if I could just add before I hang up. I am a domain expert in finance. If someone wants me to help with the finance use cases, I volunteer. Thanks.
So, I guess the thing that I want to maybe establish is that the utility of these use cases documents was originally driven by the need to move forward and get a charter accepted to move to be a working group. Our use for use cases, you know, once we are a user group, is slightly different in the sense that, you know, it's, we really want to, as we're moving toward implementation and proof of these various things, I feel like we may want to, you know, sort of break out a few that are being actively done. I mean, I don't quite have a feel for, you know, who is planning on, you know, devoting code resources this year to some of these use cases, you know, that, you know, either some kind of pilot or working prototype or whatever in 2017. And those are the use cases that I know I personally would really like to know who the domain experts are, you know, maybe, you know, engage, you know, to drive those use cases to a higher level, and then sort of, you know, skip the ones that don't have active, you know, deployment planned or active, you know, developer resources for a little while, because what I'm foreseeing is that we've got some very interesting problems to try to understand around, you know, how many verified claims are in a single verified claim object, you know, what's going to happen with things like selective disclosure or other kinds of blinding, which maybe we have, you know, thousands of small verified claim objects that are, you know, anti-correlated or whatever. I just feel like there's a lot of things that are going to have, you know, going to have impact in our design of things that we won't know unless we really understand the use cases a bit better for those things we're actually deploying in the short term.
Christopher, I prematurely acknowledged you and didn't know Adam wasn't done. So Christopher's next, then Matt, and then Matt's going to – I'll be on the cell phone. I'll dial back in. So Matt's going to take over the IRC stuff. Go ahead, Christopher.
I just spoke.
Oh, I'm sorry. I thought that was Adam. Never mind. Matt, you're up.
So I had one comment to make about the use cases and the process that we're through right now. And Christopher, this may be a little different than other working groups, and we have to figure this out. We don't have the deliverable of making software. We're making a data model, which feels a little different in the kind of the grand scheme of what the W3C may have done in the past. And what I'm hoping for or expecting us to be able to do in the when we're starting to describe elements of this data model is to say, you know, this section or this decision supports this use case, and have more of a explicit relationship between the technical spec and the use case than because we're not necessarily going to have an implementation that is restricted to the scope of the deliverable that we're building. I think our implementations are going to be much bigger than that, because we're going to try to make things that work, and the data model is just kind of the foundation of all of the other things that we're doing as implementers. And I'll just add on to that, since we as implementers are doing things that are kind of beyond the scope of the working group, I think we're going to get into, and we've already seen this a lot in this group, we get into discussions that are kind of out of bounds for what the working group's charter is describing, but they're important in sort of understanding or interpreting this this data model. And so trying to have some use cases that help us bound those discussions is what we're trying to get to. And the community group would be the forum for this sort of extracurricular activity.
we have a queue.
Joe?
Yes, I just wanted to add, one of the great things about use cases is that they are so valuable that even ones that are poorly formed can be useful. So I anticipate that's going to be a big part of our work, and I would like to find, I don't know where the original, I know there was a much longer list, but it would be great if someone could point me to that just to review it. But, you know, part of our work is going to be to distill all the possible use cases into just a handful so we can have a concise conversation. So that's, I see taking sort of the raw potential use cases, you know, that's going to be the work. And so hopefully we can catch a bunch of this stuff, but also focus on a subset that focuses on our conversation. I just wanted to anchor that. That's all.
All right, this is Greg. I'm up next, I believe. I think that use cases are often used in order to derive requirements, and that's also an organizing principle for having multiple use cases that all say the same thing by tying them to specific requirements. And then at that point, the spec is best left for referencing the requirements rather than the individual use cases. This is the practice we took on CSV on the web, and I believe that there might even be some support for it within the Respec tool. Shane would probably be the expert on that.
And I was muted. Sorry. No, unfortunately. There's stuff for best practices, but there isn't stuff for that.
Manu, you're next on the queue.
Right. So just to note, I'm a bit concerned about taking too much time with the use cases in the working group. Here's the sad reality. Usually when a working group starts the W3C, I have noticed that the use cases stop being looked at to a large degree. That's certainly not true for every group. I certainly hope that since there is so much interest in the use cases in this group, that we do spend an acceptable chunk of time on that. I don't know what that time is. My percentage is like 15% of time on the use cases, of call time on the use cases. I think that, you know, 10 to 15% sounds good, with the rest being technical discussion, because we do have quite a bit to discuss technically. We also should note that, you know, we have so aggressively whittled down the scope of the working group, and we did that not because we really wanted to. We did it out of necessity to make sure that there was something that was a lot of people couldn't object to at W3C. They wouldn't feel like we're biting off too much. But we should also understand that there are a number of companies in this group that have a much broader ecosystem that we're building out. And while that is not the focus of this particular working group, as Christopher said, those conversations are going to be happening in parallel. There are going to be a number of us that, you know, go to Rebooting Web of Trust or meet up at Bird of the Feather meetings at IETF and talk about the larger ecosystem and, you know, storing claims and digital wallets and digital repositories and, privacy-aware digital signatures, like all that stuff, while it's not in scope for the working group, I think it's certainly in scope to mention in the use cases document. And it's certainly in scope when it comes to, like, the larger vision of what we're all trying to drive towards. So it is important to understand the difference between what the working group is cleared to work on, and the kind of larger vision that many of us are kind of chasing. The working group is just working on a sliver of that. But I want to make sure that we don't lose sight of the larger vision, and I think the use cases is a way to keep that in mind. Because my expectation is after this first verifiable claims working group thing is done, over the next 2 years, a number of us are going to be working on protocols and moving verifiable claims around systems. And so the verifiable claims working group, I would expect that we request that it's rechartered to work on those protocols, right? And when that happens, or if and when that happens, this use cases document that we're working on right now will flow into that group as well, right? So that's why I'm such a fan of, you know, the suggestion of these kind of interaction models in the use cases document, because I think we are going to need those in the next version of this working group. Done.
Thanks, Manu.
And so this is Johnny Crunch, so I guess on this. Nick,
yes.
Ditto. That was my comment. Yes, I'm a physician. I'm a board-certified geneticist, and I've been working with the ABMS, the American Board of Medical Specialties, about the necessity for verifiable claims and, you know, the idea of rebooting the Web of Trust. And their actually question to me was, well, how do we actually implement this, and how do we actually do key rotation, and how we actually handle this? In which case, I think that I agree, it's not necessarily in scope, but certainly it's parallel, and I think it's probably a future in-scope charter for the working group, but I think we have to finish out the modeling first. That's all I have. Get up.
All right. Let's see. Oh. Amigus?
Yeah. Got him. Yeah, so just to tack on a little bit onto Manu's point about the role of the use cases. So in my experience, they're very useful early on, but I think someone else said earlier, I didn't catch who, about the idea of, you know, you generally move from use cases to requirements to implementation, right? In other words, the use cases are usually a tool early on to give you requirements. And in fact, there's an anti-pattern in architecture called coding to use cases, where if you skip over the necessary step of deriving requirements from use case, you end up coding to use cases, you end up with a very good solution. So I agree with Manu about, you know, the time we spend on them, but I'd also say that I think I would certainly want to spend a significant amount of time early on dealing with the use cases and making sure they're what they need to be. But as the work goes on, I think it's almost a yellow flag if we're still talking about the use cases and modifying them very actively as we go late, because it shows that we haven't done a good job of requirements. That's it. Thanks.
Manu?
Yeah, just before we close the call, we have like 5 people that joined after the call started. I wanted to make sure that we get their idents before they hang up. So just a point, let me know when you're ready to do that, Matt.
Okay, I think we're kind of getting to the end of this discussion. For the next week or so, we'll try to move into GitHub and issue tracker with Joe as we sort of focus in on responding to his suggestions and feedback, looking for what I heard today is you were looking for some more real world examples to bring into it, so it's a little less abstract and non-specific. I think we have good ways to do that. And then, you know, hopefully, or the expectation is within a week or so, we will be able to move into sort of the technical discussions in the data model and move on from this use case discussion. Does anyone object to that? All right, Manu, let's go through the idents and see if we can get everybody identified.
All right, 515 area code.
That was me. I had to call back in. This is Richard. I had to call back
okay.
in myself.
Okay. 908 is Eric. I'm having a 345. 410 area code.
That's probably me, Les. Jason. I had to dial back in.
Okay, and 541 area code. Okay. 650 area code.
That's Johnny Crunch.
Hey, Johnny Crunch.
Oh, okay. And I think that's it. Thank you, everyone. Okay, that's it, Matt. Over to you.
All right. I think we're at the end of our time. We'll end 2 minutes early today. Thanks for the discussion.
Can we spend 1 minute on priority review of the next agenda items? Or what is
sure.
the priority for next week?
I'm sorry you broke up. What was that?
Yeah, what is the priority first for next week?
You know, I think the protocol or the process would have us prioritizing issues that we're identifying in GitHub. I haven't taken a look, and the chairs haven't sat together and tried to pick the next two or three that we should close on. But I'll take recommendations if there's an item that you want to clearly discuss.
I don't know. I mean, I'm kind of stuck on the things that are outside of scope. So I'm trying, you know, as far as, you know, signature formats and things of that nature. So
So my understanding from the takeaway from what we want to do here, it would be good if we had a few minutes for me to anchor what we've done in terms of GitHub. Like, I think I want to have an issue for real-world examples. You know, so a few minutes to go over how to continue that use case conversation on GitHub based on what I've done this week, I think would be useful to have some time on that.
I mean, I would love to have the Web of Trust one also, you know, articulate a little bit further, simply because it's something we can deploy sooner than later.
So let me suggest something, Christopher. We can mm-hmm. absolutely talk about the data format of Web of Trust needs, right? I mean, that's
okay.
Certainly in the WG's scope to talk about. I mean, if what we're talking about is like, if I want to do a Web of Trust use case and I want to express that my name is Christopher Allen, what does the verifiable claim look like, right? And
yeah.
and we can definitely have that conversation in the working group.
Okay.
Right? But
yeah.
if we start diving into like, you know, okay, let's
no,
start talking about the signature format, meaning like the nitty-gritty of the signature format, that's probably out of scope, but we do have to talk about like, okay, well, in the verifiable claim, how is it verifiable? Where does the signature go? And then, you know, you can kind of fill in the signature format through
right.
mailing list
I mean,
discussion in the community group or something like that.
Yeah. And I think what was just said a minute ago, in the sense of, you know, I have asked for a while around, you know, what is a self-signed claim? You know, what is, you know, some of these sort of really simple, basic, let's, you know, what PGP did to start off with, can we replicate that with verified claims or not? Is an early thing for me, and that has, you know, we can skip the signature types and all that type of stuff, although we certainly have some tools where we can model, but it's more the data layout and RDF style questions, in the sense of you know, making sure we don't make any mistakes in that area.
Yep, I'd say that's very much in the go. And to be clear, I think, you know, what Matt said was, you know, the chairs do look at the issues and they prioritize, but that doesn't preclude anyone on this call from saying, I would like to talk about X next week. And what we may do is say, why don't you open an issue on that and put your thoughts in there so everyone's primed for the discussion before it started, right?
Yeah.
So in this particular case, Christopher, I'd say, why don't you open an issue on self-signed, you know, Web of Trust style verifiable claims, and then a number of us can jump in and talk about it, and then we'll be primed to have that discussion next week.
Okay. Can you put a link to which repo that I'm putting this in? Which issues?
Yes. Let me... Would this go into
the spec? I have to admit, that's been a little confusing to me.
I got it. It's in there.
Okay, great. Thank
okay,
you.
Thanks.
It's also referenced from the use case document.
Yep, and if you want to get into the nitty-gritty of the so if you want a use case in there, put it in the use cases. There's also the data model one. If you want to have a specific discussion around data model, the issue tracker's there. Like, what does the message actually look like?
Yeah, data model. Got it. Okay.
That's it.
I will
just
post in those two places.
Awesome.
Thanks, Christopher. Well, I think that brings us to the end of our time today. We're a couple minutes over. Thanks for the discussion, and we'll see everyone next week.
Thanks all. Bye.
Thanks, Matt.